Welcome to Six Again, your go-to rugby league podcast with hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Newton. Let's kick off.
So, another crazy weekend down, and we're going to start with a good news story. I promise we'll get to that one. We're going to cover, Ricky Stewart's latest verbal lash out. We're going to cover, Tariq Sims' final game for St. George by the look of it, and also the Knights and West Tigers and the NRL all settle separate disputes. Before all that, we want to apologise for not getting the Round 21 preview show up. We could have line issues with that one. It could have, but it would not have been pleasurable for anyone to listen to. We'll put it that way.
So Adam was out, Nick was out, so that left me to do it. Ali is going through teething right now. I got home late from work. Mrs. went, here's the baby, take the baby. And the quietest she was all night was 1 a.m. I was eyes hanging outside my head, and me and Ali done the podcast. And we're not releasing it. We might actually release it at the end of the year, like a blooper reel kind of thing. Like,
how about we send it to whoever comes last in the footy tipping comp? They're the only one who has listened to it. As punishment, far out. So I think Jared made the correct executive call there not to release it. again, thank you, eardrums. And I got to say, without it, I tipped the worst I've tipped in quite a while.
Oh, and there you go. It worked out for everyone.
Yeah, we'll jump over to footytips.com.au first of all to have a look at how the comp is going with, 4 weeks to go? Yeah, that was round 21. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of you got 7 out of 7. 7 out of 8. A whole bunch got 6. I got 5, which was the worst I've done in quite a while. And Jared got 3. So look at that. Well, you got 3. That was horrible. You're trying to catch up though, I guess. And unfortunately for the majority of us, one of the people who got 7 out of 8 is Rocking Horse Road, who is already on top and he's still on top by 2 points over the underscore Irk on 130. So it's 141 to 139. And then there's a 3-point gap now to myself, 136. So it's 5 points from third to first. Reggie Sidesteps, 135, and Sharkopolips is 133. So Rocking Horse Road's looking the goods with 4 weeks to go. Over on the street competition, people are having to take risks now to try and top _R3 with a lead of, a top streak of 15. And at the moment, the longest current streak is 8 by Cryptonotradamus. So a lot of ground to make up. And I'm thinking that's been _R3's 15 long streak was something like round 7 or 8. He came off that. So he's been holding that for that time. So with 4 rounds left, footy comps, starting to wrap up. All right. Good news story. Did you know, and you may have known if we'd done a previous show, but Jesse and Kenny Bromwich became the first brother pair to play 500 games for the same club. So obviously combined. They'd played 499 heading into this weekend, and they've now played 500 games for the Melbourne Storm together. Now I'm going to see if Jared can tell me the second and third brother pairing if he hasn't already seen this list.
Got to be the Morris twins, isn't it? Or is it the same club?
No, same club.
Walker Brothers?
The same club. Walker Brothers? No.
John's Brothers? They would have played a decent amount of time together.
Yes, so they're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th on the list. Matthew and Andrew Johns, 425 games for Newcastle. Tied, actually, with Nathan and Ian Hindmarsh for 425 games for Parramatta.
Jesus, there must be a... must be a small gap between 1 and 4 and 1 and 5, just because 425.
Yeah, 75 game difference. Now the brother pairing that is second is also from Newcastle, hence why I threw it your way.
Gidley.
Yeah, Matt and Kurt Gidley, 472 games for Newcastle. And check this out. Steve and Chris Mortimer, 466 games for Cambry.
Oh, Steve and
Pete
brothers.
Mortimer, 464 games for Cambry. So Peter's slacking. And then Kevin and Kerry Walters.
Perfect segue. So this is going to feel like last year or over again, but a lot of the reasons I've missed out on the thing is Ali is getting the brother sister.
Oh, yes.
That is the reason. That is the reason.
That we've been throwing that out here.
I've missed so many podcasts.
All of the inconsistencies of this podcast can be measured back to Jared.
Yeah, and Adam was, what was your first reaction when I told you like 8 weeks ago? Holy fuck, why?
Yeah, why? Way too close.
Yeah, there's going to be 14 months difference. It was not planned. There was a lot of rum involved. It was the first night we were both away from Ali in the entire time, and here we are.
God. Anyway, from a good news story to a bad news story. Now, this has been one that's kind of ebbed and flowed.
Yeah, right, okay.
No, I meant the footy stories. It was just thrown in there in between. That could be taken either way, depending on who it is. So, the state government funding for New South Wales stadium upgrades has now been thrown in the gutter again. And Peter Vlanis was not all too pleased on it. So, I don't watch the Today Show, but the comments related back to that, I went back and watched it. He definitely did not mince words. So the current New South Wales government, Premier Dominic Perriott, has reversed the suburban stadium funding plans. Now, this goes all the way back to $800 million that was promised to update ANZ Stadium or Stadium Australia, whatever you want to call it. That was retracted at the start of the COVID pandemic. It was redistributed to be split between suburban grounds to do them up. And that has now since been retracted again. So Vlani said, we've had an agreement in place since 2017 and we've been very patient with them, talking about the New South Wales government. The money is set aside to be spent. There's billions of dollars in infrastructure funds available to him. We're only talking $300 million that's left to be done, and that is available to the government. NRL, we've compromised already, dropping from $800 million down to $600 million. But this government went to the election with an $800 million promise and has since renounced that. Perriott has said that they need that money for prioritising funding for flood victims compared to the investment of new stadiums. And Vlandy's acknowledged that, but also said he's spinning that and using human tragedy to get himself out of an agreement because there's enough money for both. So interesting. Not good news in any way, shape or form for NRL and as a whole, but the biggest caveat to this is as part of that funding agreement that the New South Wales government put forward was that the NRL grand final would remain in Sydney till 2040 something. By retracting the funding, that has pretty much opened up a clause in that grand final promise. And there's a chance that the grand final may again be outside of Sydney this year.
Look, I get it. There is a justification to say that the federal government has, I know you say it's state who's funded, but, you know, the federal government pulls funding, the state must pull funding. It works all the way down in the local level. That's how government works. They get all their money from what? From up above. They've forked out billions and billions of dollars. You know, you've had COVID fires, pandemic fires, floods, Noah's Ark's come across, you know, all that fun stuff that everyone's having to deal with the last, what, two and a half years. I understand the justification for it, as Peter Vlandy said, but in saying that too, if I was Peter Vlandy, I'd be like, okay, you promised this money, show me a breakdown of where it's going. And if they're spending any money on something that's not directly involved in whatever natural disaster you want to pick that's happened in the last 2 years, then I've got a problem with it. But if this money can be reallocated to assist people in financial hardship after losing their houses, I'm all for it, if it does.
Yes, the difference is, I think, he's saying this is part of the infrastructure fund, and if that goes towards building new houses, repairing houses, it's understandable, but it's hard to also believe that there'd be anything less than at least hundreds of millions, if not a billion or $2 sitting there in a government kitty, not for a rainy day, but
literally
literally for a rainy day. But I find it hard to believe that all of that would be used up
in this situation.
If it was promised long ago, why wasn't some of it already?
I have doubts about it. Like the free-for-all spending that the federal government did in my local area for the $1,000 fee was rorted out of everywhere. And I can go into how I know about that, but that's pointless. In times like this, if they're going to be pulling something from a national sporting organization that was promised, they need to have some microscope on where this money's going. That's all I can say. Like, it needs to actually show effect they're doing. Otherwise, if they're just spending money to spend money that's not fucking going anywhere, it's just pointless and it's not helping anyone, because as I said, it was supposed to help the people whose houses were lost. But on the other hand, if they're not going to do that, they're better off throwing the NRL to increase the infrastructure in the New South Wales state.
Like, not saying that it's not going towards the flood victims. It very well could be or is. But all of it, that's what I think Pierre Vale's asking for answers for.
No. Look, Adam's going to love this. We need some clarity on where the money's
going. Ah, look at that. Transparency. That's an amazing
transparency
thing. We're going to see transparency. Jared actually set up a segue for once. The West Tigers and the NRL, kind of, I think, was out of most people's heads by now, but that controversial West Tigers-Cowboys finish from a few weeks ago, West Tigers have been pursuing as many different avenues as possible with regards to whether legal action would be the way to go to get a decision overturned. And it wasn't until late last week that the chairman and CEO of the West Tigers met with the chairman of the ARL, NRL CEO and NRL head of football last week to go over it kind of like as a final hurrah, sit down, get everyone together, that sort of stuff. The NRL acknowledged the concerns by the West Tigers in response, has put forward its interpretation of the rules. The NRL has already acknowledged the bunker decision of the escort was incorrect. So in the end, the NRL acknowledged the professional, respectful manner in which the representative of the West Tigers have assured their concerns on behalf of their club's members and fans. However, there will be no further consideration in relation to the match. So basically, the NRL admitted that they got a call wrong. However, they were allowed to get to the point of making that call by showcasing their version of events and why it was within the quote-unquote rule book. I think.
Look,
I like the fact that West Tigers took it this far.
I don't give a shit.
You would if it was your team and it was 2 points for finals.
Well, no, because it works in my favour, because we don't have Tigers and Warriors chasing up our ass for us not to get a top eight. I wouldn't spoon. If the West Tigers got the wooden spoon, I think it's going to get revisited, because by the looks of it, they're only one game out of the wooden spoon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only a, 26-point difference between the Titans and for and against. 27, sorry. But well, I'm just a big believer. The referee, the whistle's gone. That's what I've always been like that. The whistle's done. Yes, I get shitty about decisions, but
the whistle wasn't done. That was the point.
Well, it was done when it was created. When the kick went over the penalty goal. I'm over it. Like, there's so much more drama, like things to talk about. And I'm glad that it's just done. But it'd be interesting in 4 weeks' time when the wooden spoon race heats up.
It'll be also interesting for the Cowboys if it means that they get a home final, because that'd be a big difference for them. Well,
if they didn't have that game, they would still be second, but just not a game difference.
No, which could prove a difference later on. Who knows?
Well, going to North Queensland in the final game is pretty big.
Yeah, it's a big difference now. The way that they've turned around that stadium up there.
It looks like they're probably, Cronulla. That would be a good game. Jesus. Look, Queensland versus Cronulla, round one. Let's go.
The NRL acknowledge that they will need to be doing a review of that rule at the end of the season. Here's a review. Get rid of it. There you go. Done.
Of the captain's challenge. I agree.
It's a dumb idea when it came in. It's a dumb idea now. Anyway. Talking about dumb, Ricky Stewart. So, I didn't get to see this game. I was at a wedding on a Saturday. All I have heard about it since then was Ricky Stewart's comments, doubling down on his comments, the fact that as of right now, the NRL hasn't issued a fine. Is that correct? Like, officially?
Not yet.
However, the Canberra Raiders have released a statement basically along the lines of, we don't condone the comments that he's made. However, it's a high-pressure job being a head coach and comes with intense scrutiny. Therefore, we're going to stand by him professionally and personally. I was expecting some backbone from the Raiders. That was like, there was pretty much nothing in their official statement. I paraphrased slightly, but that's the gist of it. When I say slightly, I mean a lot. It's going to be bothered reading out the whole thing.
Right. Raiders fans are pissed off at this. Wally's pissed off at this. He called, was it Ricky Stewart's a hypocrite because he has Jordan Rapana in his team?
Yeah.
Look, I may be the minority right now.
You always are.
But I want to wait 10 years on this, just of when the boys' autobiographies come out. Because you're not like how much stuff you get found out from autobiographies when they release. And if Ricky Stewart has an autobiography, this is going to get a whole fucking chapter. And I really hope that, because all we got, all the information that's released, and this is coming from NRL 360, but all that's coming out is that he had a dust up with Jamin Seven when he was 12. His son did. Sorry, Ricky Stewart stepped in. Jamin Seven's dad stepped in and became a whole hoo ha from that. That's all we know. You know, I have my theories. We're not going to get into them because that's irrelevant to the conversation. But like, how do we find this? We want more emotion in the game, but when Ricky Stewart does something, he's condemned. And I know he shouldn't have said what he said, but...
Your name, Paul Kent.
What? No, but, like...
Someone put a tweet out today of three different ways Paul Kent's going to defend Ricky Stewart, and one of them was, we want more emotion and personality in the game.
Like, do you like the robotic answers?
No, but...
How much fun is it going to be next time Raiders Ricky Stewart?
Yeah, you don't... You don't get personal like that. You don't need to do something like that. There was already enough in there based on what was said during the week. You don't need to go out there and...
You know what's funnily enough? Like, I was having a conversation with someone about this on the weekend and before all this went down. And, you know, someone got complimented as a good player and, you know, seems like they have a really good... reputation amongst the other players, because that's a big deal. But I remember playing, you know, when I used to play footy, like things happen in tackles, accidentally, not on purpose, but when they happen accidentally a few times from a certain player,
yeah,
you're like, oh, this guy's a fuckwit, but everyone else loves him because they're like, oh, he played. But I'm like, no, he did this in the tackle, did that, like, kind of thing. And I was talking about it. It's nothing to do with Jameson, but I was wondering, I was sitting there wondering, if you sat down with a player and talked with him honestly, like a few players, sorry, who would be that dick that everyone's just like, I fucking hate him? Like, he, you know.
There'd be a few, but.
Yeah, but it'd be interesting. And, like, what is Salmon's reputation amongst the other NRL players or the reserve graders? Because he's mainly a reserve grader. And, you know, what was his reputation, you know, coming through? That kind of stuff interests me. It's not particularly James Ham, but like other players as well. It's an insight that we will never hear because of what Ricky Stewart said was condemned.
No, I don't agree with that. I think we definitely will hear it. I just don't want to be dumb enough to say it at a press conference after.
Oh, no, we won't hear it. You don't hear that. You don't know who's the players no one likes playing against for that reason at all. You do. No one will ever do that, release that information. Unless you sit down with a few players and talk to them at the pub. Like, you can sit there in your own head and go through your playing days and go, that was just one bloke.
Yeah.
That just, no. But he might have a stellar reputation everywhere else. You know what I mean? Like, it's just everyone's perceived differently on different circumstances. And it's just, it interests me, like, what the...
Yeah, I agree with that bit. I think that is an interesting point. And I think there are certain times where players will actually say that, depending on what autobiographies you do read. But there was a clip the other day I was watching, can't remember what sponsor it was, but Brett Morris... or Josh Morris, I really can't remember. One of them was on the couch and they were talking about the most hostile environment to play in. And one of the commentators was saying South, and he's like, he literally went, I hate South. You couldn't pay me enough money to play for that club. I hate them. I've hated them since I was a kid. I hate them when I was playing. You would never be able to get me to play for that club no matter how much money you paid me. And I was like, do you know how nice it was to hear a player actually say, yeah, but that's just saying, I hate the club. That's completely different to saying, calling someone out personally.
I know, and Ricky Stewart shouldn't have done it, but like that stuff interests me more than the robotic answers.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like that's my point.
And the best example I can remember recently was, this isn't going to interest you at all, but it was a big player trade. In hockey, and he went from one team who had a massive rivalry with one of their local teams in Canada, and he moved down to Florida. And the other team in Florida has won the last two, sorry, except for the two previous to this championship, had won both of them. They're saying, what do you think about Tampa? He's like, well, I came from hating Alberta, but I hate Tampa more. Us to be the best, we have to beat them. I've moved here. I play for Florida. I hate them. It's part of the rivalry.
Yeah, no.
And I look forward to the matchups. And like that's not a robotic answer.
We had a conversation about it last year because, contrary to what I just said, there were rumblings around Matt Duffy as well back in St. George and stuff like that. And all the fans were absolutely amazed that they got rid of Matt Duffy. Barring Wall, he wasn't. When you do listen to his mate, I'm backing you here. He was quite happy when Bulldogs signed him. But for me, what's proven interesting since then is that Bulldogs could have kept a fullback like him for minimal contract for another year as a replacement in reserve grade. But my theory is he's causing disruption amongst the team, which they had to move on because they moved him on 4 months after bloody signing the bastard. So stuff like that, I read into a bit more. It interests me a lot for that reason.
See, that's just the title of our show now, Jared's Conspiracy Theories. Jared Theories.
Righto.
And on that, let's move on to David Clemmer and the Knights. So, talking about not being robotic, suppose if you mouth off at your trainer who's bringing a message out from the coach and you yell at said trainer and continue to go on your own way, you'll get in trouble for it. So that's what happened to David Clemmer Obviously, not round 21, but round 20. In between the Parramatta approach and all that sort of stuff, he was handed a show cause notice by the Knights. And the Knights have confirmed since then that mediation involving Clemmer, his management, the Knights have resolved the matter. Clemmer has accepted his responsibility for failing to follow the direction. He's been issued a suspended fine, which will remain confidential, and Clemmer resumed training with his teammates today. So he wasn't named, obviously, for round 21. But it's the first, and that was the first game he'd missed since round 5. So
okay,
looks as though it's been dealt with.
It's been dealt with. The media blow up completely, in my opinion, anyway. So the trainer did not report David Clemmer. They shook hands after the game. It was fine and clear. Adam O'Brien did not report David Clemmer. The players backed David Clemmer. It was the management of the Newcastle Knights who done the formal warning. The reports about David Clemmer being fired, while I personally don't believe they're true, I will not know until end of this year when he's allowed to negotiate for his 2025, November 1, because he's contracted till next year. So we will not know if he wants to bail out at this point in time. What gets me is, and I see both sides of this argument. Firstly, from David Clemmer, he's emotional. Supposedly, there's a culture of that kind of language used at Newcastle. That's another thing we'll never know. Supposedly, it's true. He always does this. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Mm-hmm. Hayden Knowles is a very well-respected trainer within the NRL, currently the New South Wales and Australian trainer. Why the fuck is that Newcastle? Don't know, but here we are.
The challenge.
From the Newcastle management perspective, so for the last, I don't know, We've won 3 games in 10 or something like that. For the last however long, Newcastle has been told they have a crap culture. The players aren't buying in, this, that, and the other. And this told, you know, their performances have automatically generated headlines about their performance. I actually saw it live, and it's just one of those things that we could take a clip off because it was a chase all the way off the field. It was pretty scary, actually. But from a Newcastle management perspective, you've got the CEO sitting up there going, that's my $800,000 a year player abusing the shit one of the coach has told the trainer to do with David Clemmer. And he's told, and he's gone, that should not be happening. We're going to do a review of this because that culture is being questioned, and I do not want to see publicly someone questioning the voice of the coach, which is the trainer, which is what the trainer is. So the Newcastle Knights, in their minds, have done the right thing. Gone, you know what? We're going to have an investigation into this. We're going to tell David Clemmer and the rest of the teams that this is not okay. And from that perspective, you're like, yeah, right, okay, fair call. But then I think the reaction was it pulled David Clemmer aside and go, mate, this isn't on. They launched a formal thing, which the media got hold of, and then it turned out that he was about to get fired. And you're just like, what? Like, that's a ridiculous reason to get fired. But here we are. I don't believe he was ever going to get fired, but like I said, we'll wait till November 1st. That's my thoughts on it. I think it was a big blow up about nothing. And I think it definitely could have been handled by every single party involved a lot better, other than Hayden Knowles. I think Hayden Knowles has done a very, very, very good job here. And he waited till the investigation is over and went, you know what? If the coach tells me to do something, I don't care who the hell you are. You can be Nathan Cleary, Caelan Ponga, David Clemmer. I will tell you what to do, and I'll fight for that coach in the field if any player comes back at me. I think that's the right thing.
I think you're standing on it then. It's a bigger story than anything I've seen in the media at all the whole time. But it's a good point.
No way, man. Last Wednesday, shit was teeing off. Didn't you see?
I thought that was more of the Parramatta stuff, but this was kind of thrown into it as well.
No, Parramatta was August 1st, which is, you know, that was Monday. Wednesday, this shit was teeing off. It was huge. Nah.
Yeah, I didn't. I think internal review is the right way to go about it, if that's what you want. But yeah, it's settled. Moving forward. Luckily, they got away with the win.
Sorry. I just want to throw one more thing out. Like, as I said, Newcastle won 3-17 or something. It's been a horrendous run. But what I will say about it is, and this is strictly to the media, is I don't know what's going on internally. I can't tell you. But when someone does go on a run like that, like a Tigers, Gold Coast, or whoever's gone on, there's always rumours about a big squad leaving or a max exodus from the club, stuff like that. It hasn't happened in Newcastle. Like, a lot of people said Adam O'Brien should be fired. That's another conversation for another day. But there's no things we heard about. There's actually been some really exciting signings and potential rumoured signings going around. So we've already signed Adam Elliott and Jack Heverington. It looks like they're interested in something Bevan French we talked about 3 weeks ago.
Mm.
And Will Price from Huddersfield. He's supposed to be that keeps popping up. He's the son of Leon Price, second rower slash 5'8" slash centre, and another guy called Kai Pierce Paul, who's supposed to be the English son.
We talked about him. Yeah,
but like, usually when the whole of the stuff going on, usually there's like rumours. Like Gold Coast losing Dave Fifita, so like, they were commenting on his. All his stuff. Tigers are losing everybody and we get linked with everybody. Newcastle are having a really bad losing period, but none of that stuff's coming out, which is very different. Like, for that, I'm very curious as a result of that, why that is compared to every other club. Is just no information for them to look at? Like, I don't know. It's weird.
It's a little weird. I'm talking about mass exoduses. Warriors have lost another player. Lisi Katoa has been released from the final 2 years of his deal to take up a two-year deal from 2023 with the Melbourne Storm, who have also extended the contracts of Tui Kamakamika and Tepai Moroa. Now, Katoa burst onto the scene in his first year of NRL and his first full year of rugby league, honestly. And injuries since then and then just non-selection have kind of halted that progress. But he's been released the final 2 years, as the club is sympathetic to Eli's circumstances, as it seems that they say to anyone who wants to leave. So he'll be with the Warriors till the end of this season before coming back across to Australia to take up a spot with the Melbourne Storm. And that's a huge pickup for the Storm to replace, obviously, the Bromwich brothers.
How are you doing that?
Well, they've got a lot of space and a lot of money now.
I know, but like next week's year, what are they going to have? Welch. I have a feeling they're going to get Haas. I wouldn't be surprised. They get Katoa. You know, it just keeps rolling through. Nelson. Like, it's just... Oh, and he's going to be the premier second rower. Maybe not next year, but a year after. It's going to be that good.
Yeah, it'll be something down there. Yeah. Let's have a look. And for the West Tigers, Stafford Toa has extended his contract till the end of 2024.
He's had a good year.
Yes. All right. Let's do injuries first, then we'll go to judiciary. So Ken Mamalo has a suspected PCL injury. Scans will confirm the severity of it. Joe Tarpany, of course, I traded him in for fantasy this week, got 26 points. He went off with a rib complaint and Ryan Sutton went off with a head knock. They both failed to finish. Tarpany will be assessed again on Tuesday. And not looking likely to be facing the Dragons, where obviously Sutton has to go through HIA protocols. Aaron Booth suffered a multi-ligament knee injury 14 minutes into the match. He'll require a full reconstruction as well as extensive rehabilitation. You might have seen Nicho Hynes had AB written on his strapping over the weekend. That was for Aaron Booth. Ronald Voltman is set to have shoulder surgery and will miss the rest of the season. He's had some minor shoulder instability over a couple of different episodes in his career, so trying to get that sorted. Jerome Hughes left the game at halftime on Friday night against the Titans. He'll have scans on his shoulder to determine the extent of the damage. He may have suffered a subluxation, which is a partial incomplete dislocation. What else? Kieran Foran suffered a minor hamstring strain in Friday night's loss to the Eels. He's unlikely to play in round 22. And Matt Moylan is expected to be back on deck after missing the local derby against the Dragons with a quad concern. Jazz Tabunga will undergo shoulder surgery and will miss the remainder of the season. What else? All the rest is about returnings, I think. Yeah, all the rest is about returns. We'll have a look at them in the next preview show. All right, judiciary report. So, Tariq Sims, 4-game ban for a shot on Connor Tracy. That left Connor pretty much concussed before he hit the ground, held up play for about 5 minutes while they had to get a stretcher out, take Tracy off the field. Sims was simbin for 10 minutes. It was only the 12th minute of the game. He's since been suspended for 4 weeks. I don't think the shot itself was 4 weeks worth. However, it's his third. What's the word I'm looking for? Help me out here, Jared. Third.
Suspension.
Yeah, for the same thing within a year. And that has an automatic grading based on the new point system that's in this year. So it's a grade 3, third one this year. That's an automatic 4 weeks. Regardless, so if he fought it and lost, it would have been 5 weeks. So he's taken the 4 weeks on that. And with 4 weeks to go in the season, that's pretty much his final game for the Dragons done and dusted, you would say, unless they make the finals, of course. So what did you think about the shot? What do you think about the grading?
Well says he fell into it. And he's not happy with it. I would think it's harsh if it hasn't happened more since. He signed with Melbourne too, didn't he? Fucking hell. If it hadn't happened with Sims, like if Sims didn't have his track record,
yeah,
I'd just be like, it's a bit rough, but shit loads. And I can't continually defend the fact that, because he was doing back when he's playing Newcastle.
Yeah.
And back when he played for Broncos, Cowboys actually, played for Cowboys originally.
That's when he played his best footy.
Yeah, I just can't keep saying the same thing that people fell in. This instance, old mate might have fell into him. You can't know for sure, but he's done it before. And what, 8, 7 years he's played NRL, his technique can be improved because there's other second rollers who hit just as hard as he does, who don't get suspended as often as he does. And I'm not saying right now in the last year, I'm saying over his 8-9 career, I'd love to go back and see how many times he has hit someone in the head from a hit kind of thing. Like it's a technique issue at this point, in other words.
Yeah. So I think like if it was a one-off instance in a vacuum, 4 weeks would be harsh. I'd say probably like a 2-weeker. There is a still image that shows contact to Tracy's face or Connor's face going from Tariq's shoulder all the way down to almost his elbow. So the contact was spread out between a larger area. And the fact that it's going all the way down to his elbow, the fact that Tariq Sims isn't standing upright but has actually dropped down, and the fact that Tracy has dropped down, to me showcases that when contact was made, Tracy was already falling and Sims had dropped already to come in and make a tackle. What doesn't help Sims' case is that in this, once contact was made, the rest of his arm was straight down to the ground in that he was more bracing as opposed to getting set for a full wrapping tackle. I think that would have counted against him. because I didn't see that game live, I had to go back and watch the replay of it. I wasn't even expecting it to happen. I knew it happened. I know what minute it happened in. But even then, I was watching for like him to size up and come in and smash somebody. And it literally happened within that tackle and I missed it. I had to go back and watch it again. I think it would have been taken into consideration. When a couple of people said it's a gutless decision not to send him off, I think that was a bit hard. There's a lot less premeditation to this than some of the lifting tackles that we've seen be sent off. So this is one where definitely the grading from earlier in the season caught up to him. For the rest of the weekend, James Fisher-Harris will miss two games after entering an early guilty plea to a careless high tackle charge. So that was a full wraparound hand, well, forearm to the face. That's put Ryan Sutton into HIA protocols. To me, yeah, that's at the same sort of level as the Sims one. $1,800 fine for Brandon Smith, $1,500 for Atukolo from the Warriors, $3,000 fine for Tarpany from the Raiders for a grade one crusher tackle. Nick Kotrick, one match for a gradeless careless high tackle grade two. And $1,000 fine, like I said, for Jamin Salmon for a grade one contrary conduct for kicking Tom Starling in the nuts. Yeah, I think that's everything. We are on to games, I think. There's nothing else from the weekend.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right.
This won't take long.
Oh, yeah. So I missed Saturday's games for being at the wedding, but I got the other five. And Jared, I'm sure, will fill in the blanks. Anyway, we'll start Thursday night. Roosters 34 over the Broncos 16. And we talked about last week, that was the Roosters' strongest squad of the season last week in that pretty miserable performance against Manly. Only a week later, and I think the Roosters have kind of begun flexing their muscles. I don't think they're anywhere near what they can play yet. And that's saying something. The way that they pretty much shut out one of the form sides of the last 2.5-3 months in the Broncos. I've got to say, I'm not going to say I'm confident, but my grand final prediction's looking more likely now than it was even a few weeks ago.
Yeah, look.
I think Roos is going to start a pretty decent role here.
Yeah, look, you got one of the best coaches. What's definitely helped for them is that they've got Teddy, which is going to be massive coming into the end of the year. But as we keep saying, last year helps for them immensely. Like, they had potentially the worst adversity anyone's had in the last 10 years of the NRL. And they just come out. What is benefiting is the young players who got game time last year because of their injuries. They're coming to form.
Right, so Terry Taupinua's out, and Nat Butcher starts and gets a double. And he's
Nat Butcher's a weapon. He was one of the most experienced players last year because of the injuries. Fletcher Baker is killing it. You know, you've got. Like, Fletcher Baker is one of the... Oh, mate, I rate him that high right now. He's playing so well. And, yeah, it's just turning to a point where, because they had such a shit run last year, all their young players are able to, you know, step up now. And it's really, really cool. And I genuinely think they're going to be a dark horse this year.
And
Adam did just say that Fletcher Baker didn't play on the weekend, but when they will need him, he'll just walk on and he just will not be a chink because he's got that experience from last year. It's just like everyone kind of bagged the Roosters. Well, not really bagged because they did still finish in the top four, but, you know, they kind of rid them off from last year. I don't think anyone should have ridden them off from last year. It's scarily how good these folks are. And, yeah, they're definitely going to be able to challenge Cowboys, Penrith, Like, with the form they're coming into, I think they, yeah, that definitely could be considered a top two favourite coming into this year.
Yeah, and like we talk about Nat Butcher's killing, he ran for the least amount of metres out of all their starting forwards. He only ran for 55 metres, but he also scored two tries based on effort and putting himself in the right position. Matt Lodge, first start for the Roosters, only played 40 minutes, but he outran Warrior Hargraves, who played 57. 147 metres for Lodge from 13 hit-ups. Not bad. Only outdone by Angus Crichton on 158 metres. And the outside of Nat Butcher, the Roosters forwards really shared the load. You look at their back line as well. Everyone got involved. And Joseph Manu, for Joseph Manu's standards, has been quiet, I guess, the last 2 days. last two games, only 162 run metres. Three tackle breaks, but
any other person's game would be singing their fucking praises.
Yeah. I'm looking at this. Like, the start of the season, I had Roosters and Parramatta in the grand final, and I still think there's an outside chance of that happening, but I'm more confident that the Roosters, even though Parramatta had a pretty good win on the weekend. For the Broncos, this is one where you saw the difference when they got up over... Was it a couple of weeks ago? And Adam Reynolds had a freaking masterclass. That was down in Sydney, against the Rabbitohs. They went back and versus the Rabbitohs, and Reynolds just ripped to shreds. And then you saw him. He tried the same stuff. Yeah.
This is a massive turning point for Kevin Walters here, because last year was terrible. This year, you know, it started how I expected, but, you know, I was not pleasantly, I didn't like it, but they turned it around, and I had to show respect to them for that, because they were playing really, really good football.
He's almost up to giving respect to Penrith. We'll get there.
Oh, I have a lot. Thank you very much. It's Parramatta. That's the peak we've got to get to here, because I have no respect for Parramatta, other than Paulo. But what I was going to say was, this is a turning point for Broncos, because they've lost a couple in a trot here, and Kevin Walters has to get them up again, because, you know, they had a decent amount of people playing State of Origin. You got Adam Reynolds coming off a few hamstring tightness and calf injuries and stuff like that, which, you know, was expected when they signed him. He's never going to play a full year again. And he's got to get this team up again, because, you know, he got them up in the middle of the year, which is fantastic, but he's still got four rounds of regular season. If they play finals, they've got to play their best football coming forward. And, like, we know their best football can match it with some teams, like, to some heavy teams, but is this a learning year for them, or are they genuine contenders in your mind? Because they've just got to turn it around a little bit, because they could just be tired, man.
I still think they need a fullback, and they're not going to get one until next year. I think it's a big difference. They don't have that attacking threat from the back with Tessin New. He tries to. He's got the energy. He tries to inject himself, but there's too many mistakes in him, and he hasn't got the ball playing ability.
Great utility option. Yep. Fantastic utility. I just think that, like, I said it earlier in the year, a few times Adam Reynolds played games every skin. I don't think he has the legs anymore in him. Like, he's the physical body and the mental.
He's very durable. He's hardly ever missed time in his career. So
they play so much better with him in the team, which is, you know, expecting he's a very quality player, but has he have the level anymore to maintain that standard? Yeah. To drag them, like, personally pick up the whole team and drag them over the line at a high level every single game towards the back end of the year? That's my question.
We will see.
I love Adam Reynolds. He's one of my favourite players ever, but I just hope he can, because it's a lot on his back right now.
One of my favourite moments from the weekend happened in the first game on the Friday night, in the Storm 32 beating the Titans 14. And credit to the Titans, they were in this game till they didn't get both the last one, so 22-14 with 18 minutes left, I think. So at halftime, it was 22-10. And Titans scored a try in the 43rd minute, so 22-14. Storm didn't cross the end until the 63rd minute. And pretty much from the 32nd minute till then, half-hour block in the middle, Titans were still within the game. They were still creating chances, and they were snuffing the Storm out. And then Cam Munster popped up for the third time throughout the game. So Jerome Hughes was injured. Cam Munster shifted to fullback. Xavier Coates had returned. Cooper Johns came off the bench to play in the halves.
Absolutely killed it too.
Yeah, it was somewhere all over the shop with regards to the positional play. And Munster pretty much just said, all right, Hughes is out. Pappenhausen's out. We've got players out of position. Guys haven't played together. I'll just score three tries. And I didn't captain him and it cost me a win. But anyway, my feel-good moment was young Tonomapia. First game back for the Storm after being Melbourne Junior, coming through, playing in their outside backs and some of their most successful teams, going off on a Mormon mission, coming back through the Titans, back to the Storm, first game back, and scoring a try in the last minute of the game.
What position did he play?
He played on the wing at that stage. No, he played in the centres, yeah, sorry. And I haven't seen the Storm celebrate a try like that in a long time. Like how happy the players were for this guy. Like you can see how much he's loved. They love having him back. And like the Kafusi, the Bromwich brothers, they were all over him. Like it had won in the game in the finals or something.
It
was awesome to see. It was my feel good moment of the weekend.
It's Melbourne always have those kind of stories, and people want to play for them. And there was so many stories about Melbourne, you know, being short on players and especially outside backs. They picked up Nelfolo, but I forgot about it. Like young Tommy. Yeah. He's a quality player.
He's pretty chunky at the moment. He needs to get back to match fitness. You can see that he was puffing pretty heavy, but he hasn't played for a long time.
Melbourne, they just keep rolling him out.
This is bringing back one of the old boys for them.
Yeah, I know, but it's just the production line, and this one just got put back on, but that's what it is. It's scary.
And Xavier Coates was back this week. So you look at that back five now, once Meany's fit again. And you'd have Meany at fullback, Coates, Nofaluma on the wings with Olam and insert Sonny here.
To be honest, you know what I would do? I'd just put Munster back there and have either Cooper Johns or Tyron Wish up in the six. And Jerome Hughes is injured, but I would put – that's how I would do it. And I think that's a stronger team.
Hell no. That's all good. I did think about putting Munster at fullback because he can do that just as easy as to be a fullback, but that's such a big drop-off in the halves and I want him with the ball as much as possible.
I think Jerome Hughes can cover the difference only if Munster's on the field somewhere.
True. For the Titans, another spirited performance, but again, lucky in the class and the depth of talent to be able to run it through for the whole match. Now, to me, from what was shaping up to be one of the matches of the weekend with the Seagulls and Eels being locked at 14 all at halftime, turned into one of the most impressive and then also on the other side, one of the most disappointing halves of football of the round. So, first half, 14 all. Eels came out super hot. Manly then kind of had a run of things and then Eels came back at them. And then by the time we got to halftime, Eels had scored three tries. Manly had scored two conversions and a penalty goal to Manly to tie it, to make up for that one try less. And going into halftime, as a Manly fan, I was feeling pretty good, going, all right, Eels have slightly had the better of the running in the first half. We're going in locked up and we're rounding into our game as that half wore on. And then we came out in the second half, Manly got across real quick. I was like, all right, here we go. And then literally they shat the bed. And Parramatta just rolled them. And it's disgusting for me to say that. But the last half an hour, they didn't give Manly a chance. Any mistake Manly made, it was capitalised. Dylan Brown had an absolute brilliant second half, along with Gutherson and Sean Lane. It was the ex-Manly players coming back to kill them. Not Dylan Brown, notwithstanding. And it was something I haven't seen from the Eels in a little while, where they were tested physically. They were behind on the scoreboard. And they were the better team in the last half of the game, or the last third of the game, which has kind of been the opposite of what they've been doing. They're against a bitter rival at a sold-out Brookie. And I hate it, but I have to give credit to how they played the second half. And that was without Mitch Moses as well, who has been instrumental of their positive play this year. For Manly, the positive, a clear positive for them to take out of it was the performance of Jason Saab. That was, in my opinion, his best game he's played for Manly. And I'd forgotten at the end of the game that he'd actually scored a try. It was his defense. It was his try-saving plays. It was his meterage. It was his decision-making. He had that was just his best all-round game. And the try he scored was freaking hilarious as he sat down on the try line. It wasn't out of pace or anything. But that's the only real positive I think Manly could take out of that whole game.
Yeah. I'm still a little bit concerned that this pride bullshit's going to tear you guys apart.
Oh, come on, really?
No. Like that, there were moments in there that there was a disconnect in the Manly team in this game, especially the way, because Manly's reputation, and you have been holding to it the last couple of years, is just tough, uncompromising.
I would say that's not how we've been playing the last 2 years.
There are times where when you're at your best, you do, and your better games this year is when you don't give up, and then in the last 20 minutes you've rolled. You did it to Newcastle held you all right for the first 55 to 60, but because of the physicality and the skill coming out of your halves and fullback, you just rolled us at the end, and that's what it is. And then Trevojevic coming off.
I think we also played that way, the conditions there.
Smart skill, that's what I said. Yeah, right. And then Trevojevic running off that physical ability is just what you guys have relied on. And last 20 minutes of this game, you guys just weren't in the fight. And that's it was quite unmanly like when you think about it. It was not what Des Hasler likes to play, and there were points in this game where you guys were disconnected, and which was not happening 3 weeks ago.
I think, like, if you're talking about it with regards to the jersey, the week off and then trying to come back a week later with that many players out and then back in, I could see it that way. Rust isn't the right word, but maybe timing, that sort of thing.
I hope it's that.
I hope
it's only that, because something that monstrous can break a team. Like, especially if, as it keeps running around, if you guys don't make the finals and it comes down to 2 points, like that's a big deal. But we'll just wait and see.
It was funny, actually, what I did see on some Manly social media channels was about, all right, how about we start giving some young guys a bit more of a crack now, because it looks like fine. I was like, yeah, you could have done that about 8 weeks ago. It wouldn't have made any difference to where they are. But one thing I won't take from, I'd say it's probably 50-50 Manly, non-Manly. The performance of Ruben Garrick, he didn't have a great game, but if you've watched what he's done for Manly in the absence of Trebojevic, I really don't think you can complain about one poor game, because he has been more than serviceable for most of this period. And it was not on him that Manly lost last night. That was just a poor overall second half performance. And something, like I said, I haven't seen Parramatta do in quite a while. So Sean Lane is just rounding back into that form we saw from a couple of seasons ago, where he's just getting his head through and offloading like bloody Sonny Bill Felitti Mateo cross. Now, the three games on Saturday I missed, but Rabbitohs 48, smoking the Warriors 10. With me not captaining Munster, and then the three guys I capped first, all captain Latrell. That was the end of my fantasy season. Warriors tried some positional changes again. Rabbitohs continued rolling the lineup that they've been putting out there, outside of, well, barring injuries. And where's that going to put them on the ladder now? They'll be sniffing around a top four finish again, the Rabbitohs, where it didn't look all that likely not that long ago. So yeah, it puts them one win outside the top four.
One game out.
And they're versing Parramatta next week, who are just above them. So that'll be
a great game.
And they've got much better for and against than the Eels. So that'll put them above them if they can win that. So that'll be, a big one. And you've got Storm versing Penrith. So
next game, you've got 26-6 Penrith over Raiders. It was just complete domination from start to finish. That's what you can say. I think you can really say for the Raiders in this one. And then the next one after that.
You got to say, I didn't get to watch this one. I only got to watch the mini. And just some of the efforts in defense. Like, you're going to be disappointed if you're a Raiders fan, considering you've been one of the, I'm not going to say like full form teams, but you look at their last four games, they've won three, lost one. And that was the loss just then to Penrith. But if they won that one, they would have stayed on the same points as the Roosters in eighth. So there's a lot on the line, a lot more on the line for them than for Penrith. And especially with talking the talk through the week, you've got to at least semi back it up. And obviously, that was not the case.
It ran me out. That's
all right,
fantastic. All right, next game was one of the good games. But you know, Sharks were dominating a fair crack at this. They had a little run for about 10 minutes between the 44th and 54th minute. I'm trying to figure out. Oh, they must have went for the penalty goal at the end to try and chase them down. But Cronulla beat 24 St George 18. Cronulla are looking really flash right now, and they're going to be probably the darkest horse coming into the finals. I think they're going to be hard to beat. Oh, not hard to beat. They're going to hard to beat would be the right answer. I think they could surprise a few teams. I think that'd be a very dangerous game for a team like Para, who would be expected to beat them in the finals, and Cronulla just come out and just out of voozum on the day, which is pretty standard for Para. But you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they knocked fancy teams out of this finals game. I really wouldn't. They've got the players there, and Nicho Hynes can beat any team on his day.
And I think that was a big one. I was going to bring up Nicho Hynes. This is the first Shire derby that they've got to having at Cronulla in, what, two and a bit seasons or something like that, because of COVID and then the relocation, all that sort of thing. And for Shark supporters, this would have been the biggest game of the year that they would have had circled, despite even Penrith or Storm or anyone coming. It's to beat their closest rival, like geographical rival. And Nicho Hynes stood up and was a man, basically, in a match where he needed to be. Scored a try, four conversions, was all around the field as well. For the Dragons, it kind of sums up, I guess, their season, close but not close enough. And there's some performances like this one where it looks closer on the scoreboard than kind of the game itself, if that makes sense. Just going through, like I said, highlights, the mini, and then just the chatter around from both fan bases, it kind of seems to be the same sort of gist with regards to that. All right. Special occasion game on Sunday, first ever game Bundaberg saw Bulldogs take a home game up there, taking on the Cowboys. As almost the midway point between Townsville and Bulldogs, only a 200-kilometre difference with regards to halfway between the two teams. Despite that, it was definitely a pro-Cowboys support base there. And this, like, we knew it was going to be an entertaining game going into it, the way that Bulldogs have been playing and the Cowboys doing what they've been doing this season. And it was 10-all at halftime. So Bulldogs jumped out to a 10-0 lead within 18 minutes. Adokar scored a try in the first minute, which helped. Burton in the 18th minute had a really good game, Matt Burton. And then Cowboys try-scoring sensation, Griffin Neen, making it 2-for-2, getting across in the 30th minute. And we're kind of waiting for the Cowboys to kick into gear. Very unlikely source. And then Townsend in the 33rd minute. So it was 10-all. But then it was kind of an odd second half in that we're kind of waiting for someone to score. And Flanagan were like, oh, wow. All right, 14-10, half an hour to go. Cowboys haven't looked real flash. And then Drinkwater's like, all right, I'll start playing now. Leilua in the 63rd, Drinkwater in the 68th, Drinkwater in the 75th, and made it look pretty comfortable for the Cowboys in the end. They definitely finished off the stronger. It was a very windy day. If you have a look at the conversions, 1-for-3 for Burton, 3-from-5 for Holmes, who's generally a straight shooter this season. They were both trying different angles with their conversions to try and work this breeze out, and it was not. And it looked like a peach of a day, though, to be at the footy. It was a sold-out crowd. It was sunny. It looked like a really fast track. I really enjoyed watching this one, even though it wasn't the highest quality.
Tell you what, like, a big part of Bulldogs' attack right now is a kicking game of Matt Burton, and it's elite, the kicking game. But he was just bombing the shit out of him, and the fullbacks, Drinkwater and the wingers, were just not handling
it. Yeah, not that, and the breeze did not help.
But Todd Payton called down to his trainer, and he's lucky David Clemmer wasn't there, but called down his trainer and went, hey, someone bum-rashed Matt Burton while he's doing his job. He takes so much time, and I don't understand how it's not happening more. So for the first 20 minutes of that second half, Cowboys are getting bombarded, and then that started happening. He put two out in the full. He got tackled in one and put over under the next one, which landed safe. So I'm surprised anyone's letting them do these kicks anymore. And remember, Origin, he did a really, really big one, then put one out in the full after that because he got pressured by it. Maroon, it's like...
Amazing.
And the coaches must fucking hate it because they're like, he's one of the slowest kickers to do these bombs in the NRL. Like, there's a reason that Cooper Cronk very rarely did a floating kick. He done a precision kick where he needed to go because he was able to do quick and efficiently. Andrew Johns, while he loves those kicks, never did those. He kind of, but he preferred precision kicking, where Matt Burton, like, he does do them very, very well, but puts a remote amount of pressure on him. There goes the Bulldogs attack. Like, it kind of worries me a little bit.
Can do those, but gets it off really quickly. Mitch Moses.
Yeah.
He has a huge kick on him, but he gets rid of it so quick.
Yeah. And it was a very significant part of the game where I don't know who sent the message out, but whoever told the Cowboys to start pressuring Burton, massive move, that was when the Cowboys started, in on top the last 20 megan up.
Yeah,
and it's rolling through them quite easily.
And I'm not surprised that they were giving it to Burton because, to give you an idea of the strength of the breeze, on kickoff, if you were kicking into it, they were kicking the shit out of it. And it was pulling up at the 20-meter line, the kickoffs. So Kyle Flanagan's not kicking from that far out. He just doesn't have the kick on him.
I actually...
into the breeze.
Yeah, I will say that... this last couple of weeks where the Bulldogs have been averaging 25 points per game, it's been awesome to watch. Had Cars is unleashed. And everyone's given the full credit to Burnham. No one's really talked about Flanagan.
I guess playing really well.
Yeah. He's a good player. It's like we've said this since the Roosters, but he just had, I keep saying it, a bus, a train, enough. And a fucking airplane. Just like, oh, mate, you know, this is our season. I'm going to put you in front of it and let them run over you. That's literally what his life has been like for the last couple of years. And I don't know, because Mick Potter has said it to everyone else in the team, but he just seems so calm in his game. And it looks, I love it. I love Kyle Flanagan, not because he was the first person to ever interview on the Six Again podcast, but because he's just been so criticized for no reason throughout his entire career, because I've just never seen a problem with him. And now he's playing the footy that I've always thought he could play, and it looks really good.
Oh, thanks, Dad.
Ah, mate, I do have a soft spot for him, but I just feel like a lot of criticism he gets. And to be fair, I think a lot of what's happening at the Bulldogs right now is going, hey, guys, guess what? I'm going to give you the rest of the year bar injury on the field. That's what's happening.
That's a big difference.
Yeah, I know. They've just been told, guys, go out and play football, but you've got, no matter what happens, unless you've done something truly stupid, you've got the field. You've got the jerseys for the rest of the year. I have been questioning it. Like, Mick Potter was the assistant coach of Trent Barrett. And because they've had such a significant change since Trent Barrett's gone, and was Mick Potter sitting there the whole time going, hey, just do it like this. You're a fucking idiot. Like, seriously, was that happening? Did he know what to do before Trent Barrett left? Or did he agree with every change in this? You know what? You're gone now. I'm just going to reap the rewards of you making every change, and now you found the team that's going to work. Like, I don't know, but...
A bit of both.
Yeah, it could be a bit of both. But, yeah, he just seems to... Did he sit there for the last 13 rounds and go, you're an idiot. Why am I here? It's going to be so much better.
Anytime they ask him about it, it's like, no. Trent Barrett's the name on head coach. I'm just this.
Okay, next game, Newcastle.
From such a high to such a low.
Oh, mate. Look, yes.
You got to win. You got to win.
14-10, Newcastle. We're up 14-0 at halftime. Just so everyone knows. Then they scored two tries. We'll say, I remember reading Matt Gidley's autobiography, Tomatatahu's autobiography. And it was coached by Warren Ryan when he first came on board in the early 2000s kind of area. And one of Warren Ryan's biggest things at Newcastle was, it might have been Matty Johns.
Guys, there is a point to this story, important. I promise.
Stud length is important on a field. And if there was a moment where whoever's autobiography it was, he'd run down the field at Sydney Olympic Park on a wet, greasy Saturday night in the middle of winter. So that gets fucking dewy. Even I know that and never played on it. And old mate, he would have got the guy who was running down the field, but he slipped over. Warren Ryan came in at halftime, pointed him out, took his boot off his foot and went, what the fuck are you wearing? And showed his short studs. I have told everyone long studs on wet nights. Bradman Best needs that lesson. He slipped over about 12 times in this game. It was ridiculous.
His center of gravity is like 20 centimeters off the ground.
I know. He just kept slipping over. I did note for Anali Truala's second try, he did pass the ball, which I was quite impressed with. Look, how do I explain this game?
Do we have to?
Terrible. the second try for Anari Tuala was quite skillful. It wasn't something you... Go watch it. It looked actually pretty good. They used it for Newcastle when Bradman Best did pass the ball. Yeah, I don't know.
It looked like a game of 13th versus 15th.
Look. After the week we had,
sorry, Newcastle 14 had first 15.
How many headlines do you reckon about the about how bad Newcastle's culture would be if we lost this game? How bad do you reckon it would be? We had to win it. We did. We tried to lose in the last 20. It was just horrendous. I'm pretty sure at the end of the game, we had a 46% completion rate in the second half, which is horrendous.
I'll put you 3 wins above the wooden spoon.
4 games to go.
Yeah, and Titans have Manly next week. West Tigers are in 15th at Cronulla. Warriors, who are one below you, have the Bulldogs, who are in form, and you guys got the Broncos. So,
yeah, look.
No offense, there's a high possibility of all 4 bottom teams losing next week, which would take you one step closer to not having it.
We'll be fine. All right, guys, that's the end. I need to go to bed. Ali's finally asleep for the first time in a week in bed, so I'm going to go take advantage of that.
You do that. I'm going to edit this and then sleep and then head back off to Year 11 rec camp tomorrow morning.
Have fun.
I'll see you guys later in the week.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website. All links via the show's bio.